a medical complex with which I was intimately familiar, and a golf club where my father was a member. "Ironic, isn't it?" I said, pulling into the lot. "How the town center is on the border of two towns, but in the center of neither?" Cassidy snorted appreciatively. "Well, come on," she said, putting on her sunglasses. "We're going to be late for class." "Ha ha," I said, but Cassidy didn't seem like she was joking. "What are we really doing here?" The town center was the unofficial hangout for the University of California Eastwood, whose campus was just across the street.
"I already told you,"
Cassidy said impatiently, climbing out of the car and shouldering her backpack.
"Mischief and deception. We're crashing some classes at the university, getting you good and educated in the liberal arts, so you make a stunning debut at the San Diego tournament. Voila, here's our class schedule."
I looked down at the purple post-it she had handed me.
"History of the British Empire," I read aloud. "17th century literature? Introduction to philosophy?" "Exactly," Cassidy said smugly. "Now hurry up. We're taking the road beyond the road less traveled, and being on time will make all the difference."
"Won't the teacher notice?" I asked, struggling to keep up with Cassidy's fast pace as we took the elevated pathway from the town center to the main campus. "We're not exactly enrolled here."
"First of all, it's Professor, and no, they won't notice. I used to spend spring break staying with my brother when he was at Yale, and I'd randomly sneak into classes when I got bored. They never caught me. Besides, I picked survey courses, the ones with like 100 students. We're just going to appreciate the lectures, take notes on whatever we can use in debate, and then go on our merry way."
Which is basically what happened, in history of the British Empire at least. We joined 100 other students in an echoing, tiered lecture hall and sat through a mildly interesting but mostly dull 50 minutes on imperialism, capitalism, and war economy. I dutifully scribbled down some notes, which was more than I could say for the bearded guy two rows down, who spent the entire class playing Angry Wings on his phone.
"So,"
Cassidy asked, once the class had let out and she had dragged me into the line for the nearest coffee cart.
"What did you think?"
"Interesting," I said, because I knew that was what she wanted me to say.
"Though this be madness, yet there is method in't."
Cassidy grinned and poured some sugar into her coffee.
"Hamlet. And speaking of which, time for some 17th century literature."
When we got to the lecture hall, something seemed wrong. It wasn't until I noticed the textbooks that I realized why.
"I think we're in the wrong room," I whispered. "Should we go?"
And then a professor in a funny, flat-bottomed tie strode to the front of the room, and it was too late to do anything but sit there and listen. Somehow, we'd wound up in organic chemistry. I'd done honors chem as a junior, which had been one of the least pleasant experiences of my high school career, and I assumed that organic chemistry would be an equally painful continuation of the same. The professor, this tiny Eastern European guy with a penchant for stroking his little blonde chin beard, rolled up his sleeves. He drew two hydrocarbon chains on the board. That much at least I could recognize. One was shaped like an M, the other like a W.
"Who can tell me the difference?"
he asked, surveying the lecture hall. No one was brave enough to hazard a guess.
"There is no difference,"
the professor finally said.
"The molecules are identical, if you consider them in 3D space."
He held up two plastic models and rotated one of them. They were identical.
"Now, if you please,"
he continued, drawing two new molecules on the board.
"What is the difference here?"
It was mind-blowing, the way I could suddenly see exactly what he was asking, now that I knew to look past the scribbles on the board and to imagine the molecules as they actually were.
"Come on, doesn't anyone play Tetris?"
the professor asked, earning a few laughs.
"They're opposites,"
someone called.
"They're opposites,"
the professor repeated, picking up two new models and rotating them.
"In the same sense that your left hand is the opposite of your right hand, they are mirror images of each other, which we shall call enantiomers."
He went on, talking about how opposites could actually be the same thing, and how they occurred together in nature, not actually opposites at all, but simply destined to take part in different reactions. It was nothing like the grueling equations we'd been forced to crunch in honors chem, numbers with exponents so high that I sometimes felt bad for my calculator. There wasn't any math to it at all, just theories and explanations for why reactions proceeded the way they did, and why molecules bonded in three dimensions. I didn't understand all of it, but the stuff I did get was pretty interesting. When the class ended, Cassidy turned toward me, a little furrow between her eyebrows.
"I'm really sorry I mixed up the classrooms," she said.
"What are you talking about? That was awesome." I'd never before walked out of a classroom with my mind racing because of what I had learned, and I wanted to savor the feeling as long as possible. It was as though my brain was suddenly capable of considering the world with far more complexity, as though there was so much more to see and do and learn. For the first time, I was thinking that college might not be like high school, that the classes might actually be worth something. And then Cassidy started laughing.
"What?"
I asked, a bit annoyed that she'd interrupted my private zen moment.
"No one likes organic chemistry. It's like the worst requirement there is for pre-med."
"Well, maybe I liked it because I'm not going to be pre-med."
"No, you're planning to be a field hand."
Cassidy rolled her eyes. "Obviously, I'll operate on a seasonal schedule. I'll call it spring gleaning." Cassidy whacked me with her notebook. After an unexciting philosophy lecture on something called consequentialism, we walked back to the town center. It was around noon, and the weather had turned scorching. The sky, which was a brilliant blue directly overhead, lightened to white-gray as it stretched over the mountains. I took off my button-down, which I'd worn over a t-shirt, in case it was a date. Cassidy glanced over as I stuffed the collared shirt into my backpack.
"What happened to your wrist?"
she asked.
Nothing. It's just a brace," I said, not wanting to get into it.
"So it's some kind of jock fashion statement?"
Cassidy teased. She pushed her sunglasses up into her hair, suddenly becoming serious.
"Is that why you always wear long sleeves?"
"No," I said, mocking her. "I always wear long sleeves because it's some kind of jock fashion statement." She stuck out her tongue, which made her look like a little kid.
"Very mature," I said.
"I thought we were pretending to be college students."
"Not anymore. Class is dismissed. Now it's lunchtime."
We got sandwiches at Lee's, one of those chains you grow up thinking must be everywhere, but in reality exists only in California. At Cassidy's insistence, we took our sandwiches across the street to this little slope of rocks and grass that ran alongside the man-made creek and had our picnic in the shade of an oak tree. On the trail above us, bicyclists whizzed by on their narrow path, and across the water, I could see another couple spreading out their picnic. Not that Cassidy and I were a couple. I turned up the speakers on my phone and put on an old Crystal Castles album while Cassidy rooted through the grass, picking tiny white flowers and knotting them together into a crown.
"Here,"
she said, leaning in to place the circlet on my head. Her face was inches from mine. I could see the freckles that dusted her nose and the gold flecks in the disquieting blue of her eyes. When she pulled away to study what I looked like with the crown of flowers in my hair, I had the brief impression that she knew how much she confused me and was enjoying it. "When can I take this off?" I asked.
"When you tell me where you're applying to college,"
she said mischievously. I shrugged. That question was easy.
"Probably here, maybe some other state schools."
I could tell instantly that I'd said the wrong thing.
"So that's it?"
Cassidy asked.
"You're fine with spending your whole life in the same 20 square miles?"
Wordlessly, I took off the crown and examined it.
"Well, it isn't as though I'm going to be recruited anywhere."
"Oh."
Cassidy's cheeks reddened, and she fiddled with her napkin for a moment.
"Sorry, I hadn't realized."
"No, it's fine. One state school's as good as the next. I wasn't exactly aiming for the Ivy League."
"Why not?"
Cassidy asked curiously.
"Everyone from Barrows is."
It wasn't the sort of question I was used to encountering. Why not Harvard or Yale? The answer was obvious, because no one expected me to attend schools like those. I had never shown a serious interest in academics, and I'd played tennis hoping our team would make All-State, not training for the Olympics. The vast majority of my classmates, myself included, had never even seen it snow. I don't really think I'd fit in, I finally said.
No, of course not.
Cassidy's tone dripped scorn.
You'd prefer to fit in with the brainless jocks who win high school popularity contests and the vapid girls who worship them.
In case you hadn't noticed, I don't exactly fit in with them either. Cassidy started laughing.
Ezra, she said slowly, everyone has noticed.
I leaned over and placed the crown of flowers onto her head, letting my hands linger in her hair just a moment more than was necessary. And I suppose I should have tilted her face up toward mine and kissed her then, but I didn't. I couldn't tell if she was just trying to see if I would, or if she really wanted me to, and I didn't want to find out. Instead, I told her about how it had been for me ever since the accident. I told her how I'd spent nearly 2 weeks in the hospital while the rest of my classmates finished junior year without me, how I'd missed prom and the student government elections and the junior-senior luau, how the first surgery hadn't worked and my mom had cried when she found out I had to have another, how my tennis coach had come by the hospital and I'd heard him fighting with my dad out in the hallway, blaming me, how my so-called friends had sent a cheesy card they'd all signed rather than visiting, how the doctors had made such a big production of telling me that I'd never play sports again that I thought they were going to say I'd be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. Now, the worst part was having to go back to school with kids I'd known since kindergarten, and the only thing that had changed was me, because I didn't know who I was anymore or who I wanted to be. When I finished, Cassidy didn't say anything for a long time, and then she closed the short distance between us and brushed her lips against my cheek. They were cold from her diet soda, and it was over in an instant. But she didn't move away. Instead, she sat down with her jeans touching mine and leaned her head on my shoulder. I could feel the flutter of her eyelashes against my neck with every blink, and we sat there for a while, breathing quietly together, listening to the thrum of traffic on University Drive and the gurgle of the creek.
"There's this poem," Cassidy finally said, "by Mary Oliver. And I used to write a line from it in all of my school notebooks to remind myself that I didn't have to be embarrassed of the past and afraid of the future. And it helped. So I'm giving it to you. The line is, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?"
We stared out at the creek, watching the couple across from us gather their things and head back to the path.
"Well,"
I said, "what are my options?"
"Let me consult the oracle,"
Cassidy mused, leaning forward to pull up a blade of grass. She examined it in her palm, as though she was reading my fortune.
"You can sound your barbaric yawp over the rooftops, or suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or seize the day, or sail away from the safe harbor, or seek a newer world, or rage against the dying of the light. Although that one doesn't start with S, so it sort of ruins the poetry of it all, don't you think?"
"And here I thought you were going to say doctor, lawyer, or business executive," I laughed.
"Honestly, Ezra,"
Cassidy stood up, brushing the grass off her jeans,
"you'll never escape the panopticon thinking like that."
13. That night, I took Cooper out to the end of our cul-de-sac and tossed a ball for him. It wasn't the same as taking him for our run down the hiking trails, but he seemed to enjoy it all the same. He even found a wild rabbit to chase, although I don't think the rabbit particularly appreciated the game or being hunted as game. When I brought Cooper back to the house, my mom was at the kitchen table with a mug of tea at her elbow, flipping through the TV guide, even though we have on demand and streaming.
"Where'd you go?"
she asked. "End of the block," I said, pouring fresh water into Cooper's bowl. "Tossed around a ball."
"Off the leash?"
She looked horrified.
"Ezra, it's dark outside. He could have been hit by a car."
"It's a cul-de-sac, so I highly doubt it."
"Tone, young man."
"Sorry." I took a pack of cookies out of the pantry and opened them. "Want one?"
"Not this late,"
she said.
"Bring those to the table and tell me about school."
I suddenly regretted my foray into the pantry.
"School's fine," I said through a mouthful of cookie. "Although these are terrible. I thought they were chocolate chip."
"Carob chip. It's healthier. How are your classes?"
Good. I need you to sign a permission form for debate. There's an overnight tournament in San Diego next weekend.
An overnight field trip?
She shook her head.
Honey, I don't know. Don't you have physical therapy on Saturdays?
I can call Dr. Levine and reschedule, I said impatiently. And it's not a field trip, it's a tournament. I joined the debate team. Cooper whined for a cookie, and I shot him a look that said, Trust me, you don't want to try these.
Is that what your friends from student government are doing this year?
Mom asked cheerily.
The debate team?
Not exactly. I tried not to grin at the thought of Jimmy Fuller, our sports team liaison, or Tiffany Wells, our social events chair, hanging out with my new lunch crowd. Toby Ellicott asked me to join. He's captain this year.
Oh, Toby! I haven't seen that boy in ages!
Mom closed the TV guide and leaned across the table, dropping her voice to a whisper.
Tell me, did he turn out to be gay?
I choked on the carob cookie.
Mom? What? I'm just curious, honey.
I stared at her, appalled. It was one of those questions you don't go around asking about people. Are you going to sign the permission form, or should I ask Dad? I pressed.
Leave it on the counter for me in the morning. I can take you to Nordstrom after school.
I'd just gotten up from the table, and when she mentioned shopping, I froze.
Well, you're going to need a suit for debate, aren't you?
Mom went on, warming to the idea.
And we can get you some new clothes as well. Your jeans are a bit baggy now, and I don't want you tripping over the hems.
She was smiling as though the men's department of Nordstrom was a perfect opportunity for us to spend some quality time together. And then I came up with an idea. Actually, I said, I'll go with Toby. He'll know what I'll need for the tournament.
That's a great idea.
Mom beamed.
Just use your father's credit card. Gay boys have such wonderful taste in clothes. You can't just buy a suit off the rack.
Cassidy gawked at me, horrified. That same Vampire Weekend song from the back-to-school pep rally seeped through invisible speakers, permeating the men's department of Nordstrom. I sighed, overwhelmed by the endless stretch of clothing racks.
Toby, Cassidy whined, tell him. Seeing how all of my suits came from the fine atelier of Messrs. Salvation and Army, I wouldn't know.
Toby grinned, enjoying my discomfort.
But he definitely needs a pink button-down.
Like hell I do. You guys suck.
Do we need some help over here?
A smiling sales lady who could have been one of our classmates' mothers asked.
We do, actually,
Cassidy said brightly.
Do y'all do complimentary tailoring on suit jackets?
An hour later, I had a trunk full of shopping bags and a tailoring slip for a new suit, which I could pick up in a week.
It could have been worse,
Cassidy said, patting me on the shoulder as we climbed back into my car.
You could have spent 2 hours trying on different types of trouser pleating with your mom.
You haven't met his mom, Toby laughed. It would have been 3 hours and a surprise haircut. When did you two join forces? I grumbled.
Not soon enough, apparently,
Cassidy grinned.
Now, who wants to study for Mr. Anthony's quiz?
Toby's schedule was a flip of ours. He had English first and then history.
How about you just give me the answers at break tomorrow?
Toby suggested.
How about I glue your bow tie around your neck?
Cassidy retorted.
I'd like to see you try.
Toby laughed and turned on the radio. Now let's get the hell out of the Prism Center now that we've got what we came for. Are we studying somewhere, or am I dropping you back at the fail whale? I asked.
We're studying,
Toby sighed. We drove over to this giant sprawl of superstores near school called The Legacy. It was nice spreading out our stuff in the Barnes & Noble Cafe, drinking coffee, and studying with other people, like it was some sort of social activity. I'd never done it before. Well, I mean, I had, when Charlotte insisted we do our homework together in Starbucks back when we'd first started dating, but that was mostly her rubbing my pant leg under the table until we had to give up on studying and go back to her house since her parents were never home. So I suppose I'd never studied effectively with other people. Sure, Cassidy teased me, pretending she'd messed with my drink when I came back from the bathroom. She hadn't. She just wanted to make me suspicious. But we actually got work done. By the time we were reasonably prepared for the quiz, it was getting late.
So, Faulkner, Toby said, I might be wrong, but I think you want to buy me dinner because I was so much help picking out a tie.
Fine, I said.